is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Mouth to Mouth Loud. It's been an interesting week for the president, actually, with all the stories, including the big one on China. The market has been just flourishing. There's a good feeling out there other than this fact that we're trying to impeach a president's ass out of office. Everything is good in the Republic otherwise, people, right? What could go wrong? And of course, across the ocean in London, they're having Merry Brexmas as Boris Johnson does a landslide victory. Big story there. And again, with the holidays, what is the true story of St. Nicholas? And what's missing this Christmas time? We'll have a segment there I think you'll want to hear. And then the Afghanistan war. What's behind that? You hear about the Afghanistan papers, a lot of talk about deception there. We'll start here, friends, and wish you a happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and Happy Hanukkah, and whatever your celebration is. And let's start with the top stories here, and welcome on Ava Armstrong. Ava is a political commentator, a radio personality here at America Out Loud. She's an extraordinary author who writes about America's heroes, our military and our law enforcement as well. And all her books are on Amazon or on the America Out Loud bookstore, where you'll find all kinds of books from all of our experts. Joining us here in the top stories for the first time is former Army First Lieutenant Clint Lawrence. And speaking about heroes, by the way, of course, you don't want to hear that. Now, Clint had deployments in South Korea, Thailand, Iraq, and Afghanistan. As you know, the big story recently with Clint was he was issued a full pardon by President Donald Trump. That was a historic day for him, changed his life, November 15, after serving 6 years of a 19-year sentence. Massive story with big implications nationally here. Let's get started on talking about this impeachment business, guys. And all right, did you think it was going to get this far, I guess? Before I play something for you that I think you'll all want to hear, Clint, let me go right to you and ask you. I don't know what your thought. Did you think that the Judiciary Committee was going to pass these articles? Did you think they were going to follow through with this? And does it pass the House, do you think? Did they vote it through?
Well, yeah, I kind of did. And here's why. Because this is not, even though it's called the Judiciary Committee, it's not about a legal process. This is all about politics. This is all about partisanship. And so it was very, to me, when I saw that the House was going to take up this whole charade, it was very, to me, it seemed like it was something that was bound to happen. Because it was almost a foregone conclusion, because this is not about law and order. This is about losing an election in 2016 and the Democrats being sore about that. And, you know, bless their hearts, they just can't give it up.
Bless their hearts. That's a good way to say it. But and not only is it 2016, but a lot of people would say to you, Clint, it's really also about 2020.
It sure is. And the thing is, you know, if it were, you know, a Democrat in office right now and the Republicans were doing this to a Democrat president,
right,
the media would be up in arms.
Well, let's talk about that right here. Now, that's a great segue to something I want to play for you here, Clinton, Ava. And I want you to listen to this a moment here.
Today is a solemn and sad day. For the third time in a little over a century and a half, the House Judiciary Committee has voted articles of impeachment against the president for abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. The House will act expeditiously. Thank you.
As you hear there, House Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler does the official passing of both articles of impeachment. But here's what's interesting about this story. When you hear Clint talk about, well, where's the media and all this? And what about both parties? About this was not supposed to be a partisan event. Listen to this back in 1998.
There must never be a narrowly voted impeachment or an impeachment substantially supported by one of our major political parties and largely opposed by the other. Such an impeachment would lack legitimacy, would produce divisiveness and bitterness in our politics for years to come, and will call into question the very legitimacy of our political institution.
Okay, so you see there that Nadler says both parties must support impeachment. And this was clear. You just heard his voice right there. We didn't make that up. And more than so, he says there must never be a narrowly voted impeachment. Narrowly voted. Well, Ava, this was beyond a narrowly voted. This is exactly straightforward on party lines. I mean, there's no defections here. There may be some from the Democrats that are going to vote the other way, but not the way he's saying there. What is it with these people? They say things and then they go directly against what they said prior. Do they not realize we have videos and tapes we can play back from years past?
They know they're doing wrong. Okay. Just listening to their words right there, they know the difference between right and wrong, and they chose wrong. And he doesn't have any reason to impeach Trump. The reasons are so weak. It's just a limp noodle. I mean, there's nothing there. It's just hatred that they're portraying. And their words, they know it's wrong. They understand
that. Do you think the American people know it's wrong?
Oh, yes. Definitely. Yes.
Yeah, that's the question right there, guys. I mean, if the American people know, because this is what's going to impact the future of the Republic right now, because the 2020 election, and even after that, what's happening right now is going to have long-term ramifications for the Republic, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think it's like kicking a hornet's nest, okay? They did the wrong thing, let me tell you right now. They should have sat down and worked with Donald Trump if they wanted to get reelected, but no. They decided to kick a hornet's nest. And well, what happens when you do that?
Well, that's it. You get stung. And what's really interesting about all of this past week, Ava, is that while all this is going on, it was the weirdest thing is they're trying to get the president out of office. All this good news is coming across the wire. It's like, is this for real? It's like, I'm serious here. It's like an Alice in Wonderland moment. You almost can't believe it. It's like a split screen of chaos, people losing their brains, and then nothing but good news coming from the American people. Wasn't it strange?
Yes.
I've never seen anything like it. I mean, I really haven't. So bottom line, Eva, does Pelosi have the votes to get this passed?
Oh, she'll pass it, definitely, I think. Now, some people are saying there are some Democrats that will hold out. There's, right. You know, there's a number. Some people are saying there's 3. Some people are saying there's 30. Some people are saying there's 8. I don't really know what to believe. The proof will be in the vote.
Yeah. Clint, what's your thoughts on that? I mean, there is a lot of talk about that. Manchin came out and West Virginia said that he's not going to support this. Now, whether that holds true. And we'll know where they vote at the end of the day. And the key is these 31 Democrat members of the House that are in those districts that are questionable.
Sure. Ava's right. It's going to pass in the House. And there's one reason. And it's because it's not about justice and it's not about a legal process. It's about politics. It's about a partisan majority in the House of Democrats. And, you know, Mr. Nadler, with respect to him, said that, you know, the president obstructed Congress. And, well, my question is, well, how many times has Congress obstructed the president? Mm. Because all three branches are equal under the Constitution. And so the president has been trying to enact the will of the people from 2016. The people who voted him in and said, hey, Mr. President, go in there and do what we told you to do. Mm-hmm. And so Congress has done nothing but obstruct the will of the people. And so where are we on impeaching Congress for obstructing the president?
Clint, that is so well said, what you say there. And listen to this now. Not only what you say, and I want people to hear that, but listen, not only has Congress obstructed the president and the agenda, as you say, of the American people. But all the courts, the circuit courts, and have all been in line to disrupt this policy and what this president is supposed to be doing. I don't think anybody has ever seen anything like it. Let's talk about the whistleblower moment, this whistleblower. Ava, real quick, I haven't really said his name. It's not a secret to me, but everybody is saying for sure. I mean, they're thinking it's for real. This Eric Ciaramella, is that correct?
Oh, yeah, that's real. And he and Vindman, the lieutenant colonel, or right. I want to make sure I get his title right, they colluded together with Schiff right. in the skiff. This could be a poem. with Schiff and the Skiff.
That's a poem.
They cooked it up and they all decided, you say this, I'll say that, we'll parse our words a certain way. You know, this was all predetermined and it was all illegally done. And by the way, Trump did not obstruct Congress per se. He gave the House of Representatives a bit of a hard time because he was protecting his own rights, but he didn't obstruct the Senate at all. So
what really happened with the whole obstruction of Congress thing is this. When you go after a president, as much as they've gone after this president, I don't care who you are, guys. I it doesn't matter what your political stripe is. But if you think about this a moment in very simple human terms, if you go after a president as much as they have in this particular case, when you finally go after him just one more time, after one more time, I mean, this has been nonstop. The guy's never had a day where he woke up in the morning and said, oh, it's a beautiful day in the Republic. I don't have anything to worry about. Let's just make it happen, right? It's never happened to this man. With all of that said, with all of the things they've thrown at him, do you think at some point, Clint, he would get tired of that? And then when they say obstruction, do you know anybody who wouldn't not play when they say, well, he won't bring his people or why does that surprise anybody at this point? You know?
Well, you know, you're right. Here's the thing with the president. He's one guy at the top of one of the three co-equal branches of government. The executive branch has one guy at the top. The judicial branch has 9 people at the top. Mm-hmm. And the legislative branch has 535 people on top. Okay. So you got one who is fighting 9, or on the other side, he's fighting 535. Okay. And now he's not fighting all 535 because we've got a lot of allies in Congress. But look, here's the thing, right? He is easy to blame for anybody because he's one person. And it's very hard to spread blame across 535 people or spread blame across 9 people. It's super easy when you can just see one person and point the target at that one person. And so that's what's happening right now is the Democrats are unhappy with the conservative agenda and they are unhappy that they lost an election. And so they are pointing their paintball guns at the one guy who represents the election from 2016 and who represents that agenda. And instead of pointing their paintball guns at the 535 members of Congress, they're doing that at the one guy that's an easy target because it's only one person.
Yeah,
it's very easy to understand. And the president, you know, bless his heart, he is marching forward every single day. The man, I don't know if the man ever sleeps. He continues to do what he has to do for the American people. At the end of the day, the man is getting things done. And is Congress getting anything done? I don't think so. I haven't seen them get anything done in a long time.
That's exactly it. No, they haven't. I want to talk about China here and the trade deal. Let's move it along to that topic here. So now let's remind everybody, this is the world's two largest economies here we're speaking about here. And so the big news, and this was significant on top of what Clint was just saying about the USMCA, which Congress has been kicking and screaming and not passing that deal. And you all know that out there very clearly. They haven't done their job, as he just pointed out. But talking about China, this was really, as they say, the big elephant in the room, right? Is that what they say? And but if this was going to happen, then this would be a game changer. Now, supposedly, and Ava, here's what we got so far. Now, the agreement involves a rollback of tariffs that President Trump has agreed to that, which China does not want those tariffs. He wants more agricultural goods purchased. That's a big part of this thing. But also, the deal involves intellectual property, technology transfers, financial services, expansion of trade. All of these factors are part of this. And this is just a phase one or a stage one, whatever you want to call it. This was a big story.
Yes, a huge story. Unfortunately, it got kind of eclipsed by the stupid impeachment stuff. But the bottom line is he's gotten phase one and now he's already working on phase two. So I'm very optimistic on this.
Well, but phase one's got to be signed first, though, before we can. I mean, that's not signed yet, but it's in the works of being done here. But he's holding back now $250 billion in tariffs And this is, we're talking big money here. And I think the question is, though, will China hold their end of the commitment? I'm seeing the problem with China is they don't really fulfill their commitments. Do you have any confidence in that, Ava?
Yeah, they're just like the Democrats. You know, I really think they have a lot in common. I mean, you know, dealing with China is very similar to dealing with the Democrat Party in America.
Well, not to be a smart guy here, but, you know, socialism and communists are cousins. You know that. They're the same religion.
Oh, I know very well.
All right,
yes.
Well, there you go. Clint, I digress. What do you say?
I love it. You know, Ava, you just made me laugh out loud.
That's what we do here, right. By the way. Laugh out loud. Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, a lot of the same, I don't want to be, you know, a Senator McCarthy type person. I will never be that type of person. But, you know, you did draw a very intelligent parallel there with socialism and communism. And, you know, the fact of the matter is capitalism works. And we've proven that to the world in this country. And there's a reason why everybody in the world wants to come to the United States of America. And it's not because they want to come here and change the way we do things. No, it's because we've got something that works here. Conservative politics work and capitalism works. And we figured it out in this country, and we're going to continue to do it under President Trump. And I guarantee you we're getting President Trump reelected in 2020, and we're going to continue to show the world that capitalism works. And you know, China, you know, bless their hearts, they're trying to sort of play both sides of the fence with, you know, we want to keep communism and we want to try to spread a little bit of capitalism and you know, let our people do a little bit more business and so on and so forth. They're trying to do, you know, play both sides of the fence, but eventually they're going to have to realize that America, we know what we're doing and we've got it right here. And so, but here's the thing with this trade agreement, it is absolutely historic. And it's very important that we hold China accountable for, you know, the things that they've been doing to everybody, not just the United States, but every country.
The world. Yeah, they definitely, that is so well said. Ava, I love the way Clint just put out there and says, I haven't heard it put in those terms before, but my antenna went up when he said, well, people don't come here to get a brand of socialism. They come here for America's freedom. You know, you get all these people back here, which has been a big story on America Out Loud and many other places about socialism. I mean, we're talking about it now like it's a flavor of the month, which is what I said. And yet he points out exactly, it's not like people come to the land of the free and the home of the brave and this beautiful paradise we're so blessed to be in here to say, well, let me see now. I want a version of socialism or communism. That's why I come to America. So what is it with that? That's an interesting way to put it, isn't it?
It's all about freedom. That's what it's about. And it's freedom of speech, freedom to, you know, move about freely in a country, freedom to choose the job you want to do, freedom to create a job if you want to be your own boss, like I do. I mean, this country is just a shining city on a hill. I mean, that's Ronald Reagan's words, and it's so true.
Now, let's move over the big ocean there and talk about the United Kingdom. This was really something else. I did not see this one coming, and I'm not sure that anybody really did, but the words I seen in the Sun out there and it caught my attention is Merry Brexmas. We're talking about a landslide, amazing victory. You talk about a slap in the face, people, back onto socialism and communism, and you see this happening all throughout Europe. In fact, we talked about it in a producers' meeting just this week here about all of these European countries that are finally starting to kick back and say, you know what? We're not going down that road with you people. The world has already seen this play out. We know what that looks like. So, wow, did the UK stand up? We're talking now about the Parliament, the Conservatives beat the Labour Party. We're talking in the seats there. How about a final vote of 368 to 192? Major victory for conservatism in the UK and Boris Johnson. And, of course, the Jeremy Corbyn was so humiliated. The Labour Party, he's quitting. I mean, he's done. He says, I'm out of here. What a victory for conservatism. What do you think, Clint? Did you see this one coming?
If you look back to the formation of Western civilization and you look back to, you know, all of the different various wars that formed the borders in Europe and formed the countries that we know today as you know, part of the United Kingdom. And, you know, if you look back to the history of the world, really, in terms of Western civilization in that area, then you realize that these countries formed their independent sovereignty for a reason. And they decided they wanted to be independent for a reason. And so, you know, the European Union, I think it's great to have partners to work with and go to war with and so on and so forth, but you can't give up your sovereignty to have that.
That's right.
And so I would never ask the United States to say, hey, let's just open the borders with Canada, and they're gonna go to war with us if we go to war, and they're gonna fight alongside us, and we're gonna open the borders, and it's just gonna be kumbaya. I would never ask the United States to do that, because we fought wars to protect the sovereignty of this country. The United Kingdom, the people in its history, the British people wanted to be independent. And so, you know, who are the current, you know, Jeremy Corbyn type people? Who are these you know, Europhiles to say, no, we're going to erase all of that history. We want to erase all of that history, and we want to, you know, be one with Europe again. And we want to just erase all of these borders that were, that people died to establish. Yeah. And so I think I think that's not fair to the warfighter, to be honest with you.
Well, it is the way you say it as well, that, listen, we fought for our sovereignty. We fought to the basic principles of Western civilization and where we're at now. But yet over the past couple of decades, we've seen this transition happening throughout Europe. We've seen all the borders come down and the problem of refugees and then the rise of the evil people, Ava. We've seen all that happen. And it kind of does, the way, in simple terms, that Clint just put it out there, makes you think a bit more, doesn't it, about it?
Oh, sovereignty is what it's all about. You hit the nail right on the head there, Clint, because that is what these countries are craving and needing, and they want their culture back. They want their customs back. They want their laws back. I can't blame them one bit.
Listen, I want to talk to you in the last couple of moments here we have left. Greta Thunberg is the Time Person of the Year. And she's the 16-year-old teenager that has gotten, I mean, major publicity. She's from Sweden. She named, again, Person of the Year by Time Magazine. This was the one that was at the United Nations and had that very emotional outcry. Yeah, some people refer to as anger management, including the President of the United States, who caught a lot of hell for that, Ava. That tweet that he sent out was there.
How dare you? How dare you?
Well, isn't that what happened there? And caught a lot of trouble with that. So what do you think about this decision by Time? They always stick their finger in it, don't they?
Time Magazine is a joke. That's all I'm going to say.
I'll just tell you, I love Ava already.
I know you would.
So she's right. You know, their time has passed, and Time Magazine, they are, you know, with respect, I'm hearing my lawyer's voices in my ears right now, you know, so I'll be careful. But Time Magazine, they're offbeat on this one. And the President of the United States said this the other night in Florida, in Miami. He said something along the lines of, you know, there's a senator from Hawaii who was voting for the Green New Deal, and someone asked her, they said, well, you know, how are you going to get back and forth to your state? Because, you know, you can't fly under the Green New Deal because there's not going to be any more airplanes.
That's right.
And
that's right.
So, you know, and the, so, she, you know, the senator kind of, you know, she kind of backtracked a little. But the thing is look, here's my official position on this. I'm a Christian. I'm an Episcopalian, and I do everything I can to make sure that I don't leave a scar on this earth with the way that I live my life. And so I'm not wasteful. I'm a conservative in most everything that I do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't leave the lights on in the house when I'm not here, you know, but here's the thing, right?
Yeah.
God gave us this green earth to take care of, but that does not mean that we have to bankrupt ourselves to do that. And so I think that's all there is to it. We should be responsible in the way that we live, but this Green New Deal stuff is nonsense.
Yeah, it is absolutely. A lot of people would agree with that statement. You're listening there, friends, to former Army First Lieutenant Clint Lawrence. and Abe Armstrong in the top stories here on Viewpoint. Well, listen, let's do this next. Let's talk. It is the season. It is the time of year. Let's talk about what's missing this Christmas time. And where is it all going through the holidays? And are you into the holidays, first of all? Let's talk about the true story of St. Nicholas. And then we'll have a big discussion on the Afghanistan Papers, the Afghanistan War, a little bit later in the program there, friends. Stay right there as Viewpoint rolls on.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus, you're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
I would say over the last 20, 30 years, there's been this move in the nation that, you know, you can't put the manger scene up, you can't talk about faith, you can't, you know, there's a lot of this, but there's also a shift happening in the way people treat Christmas. The online shopping has changed at all. The commercialism of Christmas has become more prominent now. Adele Wilbur is here. Adele is a former CIA, Department of Defense Intelligence and Counterterrorism officer. Ron Edwards joins us. Ron is columnist and host of the Edwards Notebook. It's a 90-second informative spot you can hear right here on America Out Loud Talk Radio. And also back with us is Ava Armstrong. You know, Ava's a political commentator and personality here, best-selling author. Okay, let's talk about a good time of the year, the holidays. Ava, let's talk about this whole thing, Christmas, St. Nicholas. I understand there's a whole history behind the guy that wears the red suit, and how he even got the red suit is interesting in itself. But it comes back to a time, I think, out of, if I'm correct here, present-day Turkey.
Yes, well, I'm going to take you back in time for a moment. The word holiday came from holy day, okay? And Christmas and Hanukkah have become very secular, in my opinion. St. Nicholas was born in 280 in Latara, Lycia, an area that is part of present-day Turkey. And he supposedly lost both of his parents as a young man and used his inheritance to help the poor and the sick. Santa kind of got commercialized in the 40s and 50s. Coca-Cola put a red suit on him. But the holidays should be all about giving, not only gifts, but of yourself.
That's good. No, the giving of yourself. I think a lot of people, what I find interesting about that story is the red suit that Coca-Cola, and you might remember that, people, with the commercials and how Coca-Cola kind of did that. But isn't that fascinating, the history of that comes from Coke? And I sort of vaguely knew that, but it was an interesting to get the reminder from you guys out there when we're looking at the history of this thing right now. Now, in the crux of all of this, as we talk about the shift from as you just said, Ava, a secular holiday that some have tried to make it into, what's interesting to me is this. You know, Ron, here's the thing. You know, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christ, Jesus Christ, Merry Christmas, right? That was the whole concept of the birth of Jesus Christ, the manger scene, the whole bit, Bethlehem, yeah, that's where it comes from. What's interesting to me that is not lost a little bit here is that right away a lot of folks wanted to make it not a Christian holiday, and they've worked real hard at that by using the word holiday. So they want to call it Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas. But what Ava just points out actually was kind of got my attention, but she says, wait a minute now. Holiday is really holy day. I find that a little bit interesting that they've been wanting to use holiday, which is really still holy day, Ron. But what are they up to where they want to remove the birth of Christ and the Christian value to the season out of what the season is?
Well, they want to... the left always makes everything dull. They take away the luster out of anything that they can touch, including the Christmas season. They're stubborn in this effort to wipe out the essence of Christmas, just that the time of the year, especially growing up in Cleveland, how the town would just be super decked out. We had about 8 department stores downtown, and it was just like a super festive atmosphere. There was a giant manger scene, and I remember as a young lad in the 80s, ACLU tried to get it removed. Some knucklehead complained, "Oh, this big nativity scene, it offends me." Well, I joined in the fight to preserve it. And to this day, when you go there with all the wonderful Christmas decorations, in the midst of it, you will see a manger scene there on Public Square. But that's what we have to do. We've got to fight back.
And let me remind people right now that Ron has I would be amiss not to tell you, his columns every week are absolutely worth a read. And his one this week, In God We Trust, One Nation Under God. He gets into it. It's on the platform now, friends, on the front page, AmericaOutloud.com. Ron always weaves in in fact, it's the focus of a lot of his write-ins, are on faith and bringing faith back to the Republic. And what I like about this particular write-in, Ron, that you talk about is you really bring it back to a lot of the cornerstone of faith. I thought it was one of the best written pieces on faith in America, but more so, you know, those people who want to deny it or want to, you know, that, you point out so many times in this great article that, you know, point after point after point after point that you can't hide the fact that we're a Judeo-Christian nation. You may try, you can try to buffalo some of the people, but you're not going to fool all the people all the time. We'll come back to more of that in a moment. Let me get over to Dale Wilbur. And Dale, what I find has changed, another thing, is the change in our behavior. The malls, the big box outlets, they seem to be coming a thing of the past. Why are we losing that tradition, you think?
You know, I don't know that it's entirely bad. I recall when I was a youngster, and probably others can associate with this, but Sears and Roebuck used to come out with the annual Christmas wish book. And it was their special catalog that obviously Ava picked up on it there. It was their annual Christmas catalog that came out with all of these gifts and that, lots of toys and other gifts and that. I mean, it was really, you know, directed that way. And I remember being a kid, we just looked so forward to that. You know, we didn't have big malls and that to go to back in those days. You had the town square where you had the mom and pop shops. I mean, that, you know, I recall the one where I grew up, Ben Franklin, Five and Dime stores, you know, and, you know, we were mesmerized as kids going and looking at the store windows. My parents both worked downtown St. Louis, and there was a big department store downtown St. Louis that every Christmas had their windows, their exterior windows, all decorated up in Christmas scenes. And as kids, we would go down there with our parents just to see their store, you know, their store windows. And that was their enticement to get people to come in and shop. And it was a wonderful experience. So, you know, I'm not necessarily a fan of the malls. I you know, quite enjoyed the way I grew up.
What I'm worried about, Malcolm, is children in this, you know, generation X and Generation Z, or whatever you want to call them, millennials, and all the younger children too, about what they're missing for Christmas. It's not physical things, okay? It's not gifts. It's quiet time and learning to connect back to God. And that's what Christmas is really about. It's really about Jesus and, you know, the birth of Jesus and all of the trials and tribulations that, you know, Mary and Joseph had to go through. And, you know, it's a time of great celebration. And for Judaism, it's a time also of great hope. you know, staying in the temple for 8 days and praying and surviving, you know, it's all about that. And it's about life and the gift of life. Those are the things I think we're missing so much. Teaching children about religion is more important than teaching them math and English, okay?
Wow.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is lost, but a lot of it is, again, this shift of where they're online, they've gone technology way. And in fact, I think I've read in several places over the past couple of weeks that church attendance is down even, and the faith part of it. Is that correct, Ava?
Yes, it is. And that is true. But I want you to also go back to the olden days again in your mind. How did people celebrate, okay? People actually taught their children at home. They had a big family Bible, mm-hmm. and they had everybody's name written in it. And they would actually sit and read verses with their children. There's also an app right now called prayer.com.
That's right.
And it's kind of a cool app, really. And they have children's bedtime stories, Bible stories on that.
But to me, the season has been lost because it's over-commercialized. And quite frankly, I talked about this some years ago on air. And what I suggested is I wanted to see new legislation to separate the holidays. What I wanted to do, Ron, is separate the birth of Christ as a real moment of Christmas, Christmas, and I wanted to remove the shopping out of that moment, and I wanted to move it from the birth of Christ into another time of year, maybe June or July, we do the gift-giving thing. And you know who I blame this all on, Ron? You know who I blame this all on?
No.
The three kings and their gifts that they bought. That's who I blame this on. And you say what, sir?
Yeah, that's hilarious. You know what? I understand why you have kind of backed off of Christmas, but I look at it in the opposite approach. I look at it that we should push back. I look at it in cities and towns across America where people, there is a resurgence in the old Christmas feeling. If I go back home to Cleveland now, because of the rejuvenation of downtown, that used to be a shopping street that rivaled Michigan Avenue in Chicago, where it's a half mile of shops and things of that nature. And yes, the shoppings were actually more crowded years and years ago, but because civility was taught, that's why it was friendlier during the Christmas season and all of that. You didn't start having the viciousness until more recent years when they started taking out, as you mentioned, teaching at home, civility, and watching out for your fellow man and the meaning of Christmas and why people seemed nicer and friendlier during that time of year, and neighbors would drop by, and it was just I hate to use the word magical, but it was just a wonderful time of the year. And that's what we need to fight to get back. Commercialism, it's not that it's more commercialized, it's the type of commercialization that is going on today. Like I said, downtown streets were magically filled with people by the thousands. I mean, we used to joke in Cleveland that, you know, the crowds were so thick that we could jump up and be carried by the crowd. Same thing in New York. When I lived in New York every year, I couldn't wait for the Thanksgiving Day parade because that kicked things off. And I lived near a location where the balloons were right by my, you know, I didn't have to go anywhere. They floated by my building. And you just got it's the spirit of the season. And I think rather than walk away and giving it away and giving in, no, we push back and make them walk away.
Ron, I needed to hear that. This is really good. I'm sure listeners get something, lots out of what you say there, but I certainly got lots out of it. I needed to hear that, actually, because I've lost that over the last many, many years. But what you're saying is that we should push back, we should fight back, and there's something to that. Dale, let me give you the last word on this here, and picking up from that point there, I think that's what over the years has turned me off a little bit, is I don't like the angst that people put out there, and that that feeling people have, like he was talking about, Ron, the downtown, the family, the people getting together, the joy, you know, if you can celebrate those moments and make something really cool out of it, sign me on for that. But you know, Dale, as soon as it turns into a horror show and people get crazy online, or they all like this Black Friday business, you won't catch me out on a Black Friday if you gave me $500,000 and said, go spend it. I mean, because it is absolutely insanity. And I just don't get what that does for people. But you know what I'm saying, Dale?
Yeah, you just stole my thunder. I was going to mention Black Friday as one of the things.
No, we call that a segue, right, Dale? We call that a segue. Go ahead, buddy.
But that's one of the things I think that has harmed, you know, the image of this season is when you see, you know, just the greed and avarice, I guess is a good word for that, that people are willing to fight each other to save $100 on a television set, you know? I mean, it's ridiculous, and it harms the image of this time of year. And, you know, you can be appreciative of you know, the holiday season and that, and maybe, you know, you're not the most religious person in that, but when you see people that, as Ron described in that, on the streets, you know, enjoying the season, enjoying each other's company, just enjoying being around other people, and you see smiles on their faces, and that's something that's missing from this country, that's been missing now, not just this time of year, but the year round. You know, we just don't seem to be that friendly anymore.
We're losing traditions. That's what's happening.
Are we, Ava?
I do think so, yes. And I'm always trying to pull those back. You know, I always, to me, having a Christmas gift, it can be a handwritten letter from someone telling me what they think of me, and in kind terms, I might add. But those types of things I save and tuck away, and they are so meaningful to me. When Christmas comes around, you just have to really understand, Malcolm, it's not always a purchased item or some big thing.
I agree.
It can be something very personal.
I agree. And in fact, I just made a note to send you a note, a handwritten note, that is, Ava, about Christmas. Tremendous thank you here. Three great, beautiful people here. Ron Edwards, they're the voice of Ron Edwards. Adele Wilbur, and our very own Ava Armstrong here. Okay, let's do this now. We're going to change the tempo just a bit here. I'm going to talk to you about something serious ahead here. You've seen the Afghanistan papers, or maybe you've heard of them exactly. We'll talk about the deception of this 18-year war. It's a pretty big topic, people, the Afghanistan war. There's a lot more to this story, if you haven't followed up on it, that you want to hear. And I've got somebody that's very, very passionate about it coming up next, who has buried her son from this war, quite frankly, and she gave of her family and to this country what this war was all about. You talk about remembrance of the season, about family and people. This woman doesn't have that son anymore. He's not physically here. And so there's something for all of us to be joyous about when we talk about the sacrifice for the men and women who wear our uniform, both overseas and domestically here back home, friends. Stay right there as Viewpoint continues.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
I'm going to ask you to go to TheWoundedBlue.org. That's www.thewoundedblue.org. That is the website for the organization that is the National Association for Injured and Disabled Police Officers. It is a support organization for these men and women who have given so much in the line of duty. We desperately need your help to raise money to get this movement going. But check it out, please, and also check out our film, The Wounded Blue, on Amazon.com.
You see, recently here we had the Washington Post came out with the Afghanistan papers. You also might remember that a lot of this information was dragged up recent times here when they went after and killed successfully al-Baghdadi. A lot of that happened from that point of reference. But there's a lot to this war. Remember, people, this is longest war in our history, an 18-year war, which seems to be ongoing forever. It's one the president ran on and said he wanted to get our troops out of these places. And it comes back to this, it always comes back, people, to the military-industrial complex and the relationships that come from that point of reference are significant here. Let's talk next here with Susan Price. Susan has a personal stake and mission in all of this, and we'll tell you about that just ahead. But as you know already, Susan is an investigative researcher. She is very much a patriot. She's a veteran advocate, and more so, she is a Gold Star mother. When we say Gold Star mother or Gold Star father, for that matter, it means that they have made the ultimate sacrifice with their family. It means that their family is not here for the holidays to celebrate. It means that there is no higher gift they could give this republic, this nation. And so it is with that 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 title is given to a person. There's also a lot to come back to why we're in these wars, when we put our young men and women in harm's way, and what's behind that. And that's where this story gets a little off the railroad track here now, when we talk about the deception of the war. And, you know, let's be clear here also, the Afghanistan papers, many people say, will be the beginning of many of these Gold Star families that will come out and be telling their stories. And as in Susan's case, as you'll hear in a moment, as she believes some of the egregious tragedies that have happened in the case of this. Susan, I'd like to start right from point reference number one. From your personal story, again, in Afghanistan, as I remember here in my mind, the Kunar province in the Battle of Gunjal there, your son gave of his life. In fact, there was a great article, which, by the way, Susan wrote back in September of 2017, "Were We Doing Business with the Enemy?" And we have just brought that to the front page of America Out Loud. As you're listening to the show here on talk radio, you'll find it on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com. If you're hearing this on podcast on a future time, just go to Susan Price under her columns or weekly columns and look for that story. Susan, bring us back to the story, please, of Afghanistan and the deception in a brief way, if you will, and then we'll talk about the bigger context of this. But the personal element of this story, please, to you.
Wow. There's just the deepest grief imaginable. The confrontation of two Marines to confront and tell me that my son was killed in action. And I knew in my heart and soul that it was very egregious, because of things that my son had mentioned to me in the earlier years before going over there, because my son had served as a recon special forces Marine, had been over to Africa and different places and worked at CENTCOM with the very leaders that ran the Iraq and Afghanistan war. I can't minimize this grief, Malcolm, that this war, the Afghanistan papers, the emerging of them, I can just tell you, it angers me beyond anything I could think of. And my Gold Star families are suffering with me the repercussions.
It's bad enough we lose our sons and daughters in these wars and what they are. And we're talking real people here. I mean, the sacrifice of American blood cannot be understated here throughout the history of this republic, and a lot of people lose sight of that. But talk about the implications of why the deception of this war. What is the deception of this war, please? What is it?
Exactly, Malcolm, exactly. It's not that my son died in war at all, because we're a family of service, so we've all served. We know that, okay? But what it is it was the deception and redaction of help, aid, support that our government was supposed to administer to us. My son ran out of bullets, air support, the very tools that he needed to accomplish his job. You want to put my son and his Marines and other men in uniform in a battlefield, and then you're going to double handcuff them with your rules of engagement and tactical directives on top of it, and then you're going to lie and say you ran out of air and artillery support. We are fed up. And you know what? It's time to hold these people accountable. It's the lies, because we know now what we knew then, and we're trying to tell everybody else what was going on. And that's what hurts, okay? Our sons and daughters would have given their life any day of the year, but that day, their lives were taken.
Susan, tell me about this. He was known as the War Czar. This General Douglas Lute. Tell me about
it. Well, General Douglas Lute worked for George W. Bush and also Barack Obama as their War Czar. He is a permanent fixture of NATO and held a very powerful position within the Pentagon. Let's equate he and his wife to the Bill and Hillary Clinton of the military world. And his wife was put in charge of Obama's DHS and cybersecurity world, and now works for the UN, once again, human trafficking. So the very people, the foxes guarding the hen house, let's just say.
As the truth is, seems to be coming out now, how do we grapple with this as a nation? And how do we prevent this deception from happening the next time?
Well, I can tell you that our beloved President Trump, he's just such a great man. He is supporting our veterans, military, and our Gold Star families. He knows, because he knows the deception that's taken place. People need to support our president. They need to support our veterans, our military, and our Gold Star family. You know what irks us all more than anything, especially people in the military, when you say you're a Gold Star mother, they smile and they look at you like that's something, you know, fantastic, they say. That's awesome. No, it's not. We don't want to belong to this club. This is, you can imagine if you lost your child and then the lies to cover that up, how would you feel? We suffer every day. So the best way we can get through this, there will be many, many documents coming out, and Gold Star families jumping on the bandwagon with their stories. And there's less than 3,000 of us from the Afghanistan war. So, and I'm sure there's going to be many, many attorneys out there wanting to know people like us. So we will need the support of all Americans. Peel the ignorance scales off your eyes. This is true. There were men that were made to walk through minefields, men in prison that were innocent, men that were killed because they knew secrets. My son was one of them. So we need your support. Thank you.
You've held on to this personal pain and the deception behind this pain. You've held on to this, I mean, yourself, for the last decade. Is that right?
Correct, Malcolm. I have, and I've only talked within my immediate circles of family and friends. We wanted to be smart. We didn't want our emotion to override us, even though we know the truth. And we knew the State Department was involved with the setup of our son and his Marines, just as they are. This is a microcosm of what has taken place. You know, it's like a pawn. We'll give you five Americans to do business with you behind the scenes, spill their blood on foreign soil. Well, that's not good enough for us, because we're the apple tree. Our children are our apples. And we're the warriors, first and foremost, that brought our children up to be stellar human beings. They're humanitarians. We're going to fight with them. We're going to support our president as he seeks justice. in every realm. So I will. I'm working on my book. It will be out in 2020. I'll be doing more speaking. I'll be working with other families in the future to tell their stories as well, because they've lost their voice. They've lost part of themselves, if you can imagine, the deepest part of them.
Yeah.
Our children are our soul. They're our legacy. They're our future.
You know, your mission is our mission here, very much at America Out Loud, but my personal mission as well as your friend here. I want to ask you a personal question. I'm looking right now at the article you wrote back in 2017, which really told a story, as much of it that we could tell at the time. Were we doing business with the enemy, which I told folks to go read. And it starts at the top. It says this. It says, "Mama, if it happens and you're confronted by two Marines at the door, you will know I'm with God." And those are words her son spoke to her. Aaron Michael Kenefick was his name, Susan's son I'm speaking about here. And those are words she actually heard in her ears from her son, who told her that at a different point of reference of time. Can you imagine your son or daughter saying that to you, people? So I want to ask you something personal. As I look back at that article, I see here the picture of Aaron, your son, and I see him, and the one where the tree is behind him in the mountains there. You know which picture I'm speaking about, Susan?
Yeah.
Do you ever think in the terms when you see a photo like that, does it ever come into your mind like that you wish you could go back before that photograph was taken?
Oh, Malcolm, you know what? My son tried to prepare me the beginning, the day he received the top secret security clearance. He tried to prepare me because he had been on missions like this that you don't even hear about. And then he worked at CENTCOM with high profile figures running the wars. Let me just tell you, in my book, I will talk about it more, but I've had been assaulted, accosted, my house broken into, I've been shot at. You know, things have happened to me that you don't hear happening to families so much of military personnel unless they know important things, which my son did. So going back, even before my son was killed, I knew that something was up, and I desperately held on to every day that I had with him, desperately. And I wish I could go back in time when he was a little boy and knowing what I know now to protect him. But yet, that's why we have America. That's why I'm a veteran, and my father and my brothers, cousins, aunts, uncles, nephews, grandparents. My great-grandmother was a Gold Star mother, for God's sake. It's in our DNA. So yeah. How do you take that back? You can't.
You can't, yeah. Susan Price, I love you.
I love you too, and I love our audience. And I love America. I love our president and people. We really need to support our president so he can bring all truths out. Mm-hmm. This is not a comfortable place to be. I realize it. But it, living in the war zone has been the place where I've always been living in. And I'm sorry, but truth is not, it's not pretty.
Yeah.
And we have to get it out there.
Well, there are no words really to put on any of that, but I think you have a sense of the things we talk about all the time on this platform, but why we hold the men and women who serve this nation in such high regard. I mean, is there really any other way, people? I mean, isn't that our call to action? Isn't that what we should be doing here? I want to take a moment and just pause a moment with you and tell you to remind you to count your blessings. Count your blessings. Count your blessings for your loved ones. Count your blessings for the season. Count your blessings for living in this amazing country, this republic, this freedom, this place of freedom, this place we should all cherish, is to stop a moment and really appreciate the season. What's the importance of Christmas? And that's what I remind each of you to do at this time here. Remember, it's time to get involved
and get loud.